You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. Since coronavirus lockdowns were announced in Australia, nearly 800,000 people have lost their jobs. That number is expected to grow to over 1 million by November. This has left a lot of people wondering when they're going to be able to go back to work, how they're going to pay their rent, and how they can support the people around them. In this week's episode, we have two stories about how we can support our communities financially during the pandemic. In times of crisis, we turn to the arts for comfort. But in the case of this particular crisis, the arts industry has been one of the hardest hit. The website I Lost My Gig Australia has recorded $330 million in lost income due to event cancellations. Many artists have been using platforms like Instagram to put on streaming events instead. But most of them are free, so the artists aren't getting paid. In our first story, Danny Stewart talks to artists about how they're responding to the lockdown.
Well, life as we know it for now is a lot different from just a week or two ago.
We will be advising against non-essential gatherings of persons of 500 people or greater.
My name is Courtney Ammenhauser. I work in independent theatre. The play that I was working on got cancelled on Monday, and then on Tuesday, the restrictions tightened to 100 people. The theatre I was working at had a 200-seat capacity, and so then lost that job, which was kind of my full-time job. So it was there like Monday to Friday, 9:30 to 5:30 situation.
Now, new rules on just how many should be in a room at once.
I also had a job just on Sunday mornings teaching drama to kids, and that got cancelled the next day. So it was just like dominoes.
I work as an artist. My name is Jillian Kayrouz. I finished art school in 2018, and this year I am one of the artists in residence at the Parramatta Artist Studios out in Parramatta in Western Sydney. Because exhibitions have stopped, I've lost any income from my art side. I also have two other jobs that support my creative job, and both of those jobs I've lost.
The spread of the virus is starting to impact major events. The New South Wales government announcing it's cancelling this year's Vivid Light Festival.
I suppose I'm one of the lucky ones in that I pretty quickly was able to snab a temp job stacking shelves at the local supermarket. And so that's how I'm getting by now. My name's Martin. I'm a writer, I'm a filmmaker, I am also an arts producer. I run indie arts events in Brisbane. I remember the week that it all fell apart, I had three gigs lined up and they all cancelled. Two of those were regular events, they have been cancelled indefinitely. In the space of a couple of days, a chunk of my monthly income, which was meager to begin with, just kind of disappeared.
The importance of art is the engagement. I'm making work to be seen as well. It's about sharing. So it's a big impact.
I think as a whole, the feeling is of being forgotten and that we're not considered a business. I do think there's an expectation for the arts to provide comfort and a space of escapism in times of crises. And like people do turn to the arts. They need that. They need something to make them feel better. But where did the artist turn?
As COVID-19 restrictions were announced, the impact on the arts industry was immediate and totally devastating. Suddenly, every theatre, gallery, museum, and live music venue in the country was forced to close its doors. Those who work in the creative industry watched as the jobs they had lined up for 2020 disappeared indefinitely. Many of those who work in the arts live gig to gig, contract to contract, meaning they don't qualify for the government's Job Seeker Lifeline. The situation is grim currently for many artists who don't know when they'll be able to perform or make money again. But thankfully, the internet exists, meaning the lack of a physical audience doesn't have to mean the end of cultural life. A wave of new online initiatives have emerged to maintain the connection between artists and audiences.
My name is Ali Murphy-Oates. I'm a proud Ngiyampaa Wailwan woman. I am currently sitting on Bidjigal Country near Botany Bay in Sydney, and I am Managing Director of Mughalan Performing Arts. Mughalan is a Blackfella Theatre and other performing arts company. We develop, present and produce new work by First Peoples for First Peoples, and that could be in theatre, it could be in art music composition, it could be in other cultural arts forms of expressions like weaving and wood carving. We're not limited to one art form.
Mughalan Performing Arts have started a series of live stream performances on their Facebook page called Mughal Live. The program features sing-alongs for kids, dance workshops and cooking classes, among other things, to ensure that their community are able to stay connected to art and culture while in isolation.
We are inherently creative people. We're storytellers. It is part of how we express our culture and how we keep our culture alive through dance, through song, through story. Not having the liveness of it is a little bit challenging, but finding new ways to express who we are culturally and creatively has been actually a really wonderful experience.
A highlight on Mughalan's calendar is the Biami's Nunu Festival. Held in Brewarrina, the festival celebrates the connection local communities have with the stone fish traps on the banks of the Barron River. With COVID-19 making it unsafe to hold the usual festivities, Mughalan Performing Arts recently staged an online version of the festival. Murawari Filipino musician Ryan Clapham, aka Dobby, was one of many who performed for this year's virtual iteration.
Murawari being Wilma Ringall's ancestral lands, so northwest New South Wales, Brewarrina, it's like 5 hours drive from Dubbo. And so that's where my great-grandfather was born and my grandmother was born and raised there. So yeah, right now I would be in Brewarrina, you know, so my community performing there for my cousin Lily Shearer's Biami's Nunu Festival. It's important that we, you know, prioritize the health and safety of our communities. We can just spread so easily. And so we've got to put them first. And for now, we've just got to keep clear. But that doesn't mean we can't perform still. Right now, I'd just like to acknowledge that I'm broadcasting to you from Gadigal land in Redfern. I'm here. We're all locked down. I hope everyone's staying safe. And I thought it would be great to celebrate Biami's Nunu Festival in Brewarrina. I'm not there in body, but I'm there in mind and spirit. So this one here is called Dipiyom Patulinya. And in Nyambar language, that means the bird names himself. We gather right here on the Brewarrina Weir, right by the Nunu, the ancient fish traps of Brewarrina. Thank you so much, Biami's Nunu Festival, for having me. So this is the amazing work of the Mughalan team, Mughalan Performing Arts. Mughalan means, you know, to play around, to muggling around. I'm just muggling around. It was such a fast turnaround that this team put together. They said, we're not going to just kick it all in. We're going to make sure that we can still have this festival in some way or form. So they worked hard to put everything live. So it's all just really great to be able to still do this. And so I'll be doing a lot of rapping and drumming and maybe even like a little workshop as well to teach how I make my music.
What does that mean to you to have this kind of initiative set up to mean that you can still have that connection to an audience and to your art?
It means the world. I need this, you know, I need this right now. To be able to perform, it helps my spirit, and especially in terms of culture, to be able to keep sharing these stories, these songs, these narratives. It helps me to put forward my identity and to express my identity and culture. And a lot of my music is helping me mentally as well to really make sense of this all. Yeah, in this weird, weird time.
If you're now working from home, you might have found that your days have become totally consumed by virtual meetings. Well, a new online initiative from Multicultural Arts Victoria, or MAV, is bringing something much more exciting than virtual backgrounds to Zoom. The hashtag Distance Between Us project organises for artists of colour to be called into Zoom meetings for a performance, turning video conferencing software into their stage. Eric Bloom is MAV's Artist Engagement Officer.
Audiences have been really excited to go, cool, this is what I'm doing my lunch break, as opposed to looking at my phone. I'm going to sit with my colleagues and listen to some music. Last week, we had an amazing musician. Her name's Gela Repour, and she's a kamanche player, which is a Persian stringed instrument, and had a national tour ready to go. And, you know, all those gigs got cancelled, obviously, because of the crisis. And so she performed, and the feedback's been great. One of the things that one of the staff members said was that it just sort of took them out of their funk for a minute.
The digital divide is very real. In your view, is this move online disproportionately inaccessible to artists from perhaps culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, First Nations artists, or artists living with a disability?
It's a great question. We've been doing a lot of talking about this at MAV. What we realised when the crisis started to come about was that we wanted to respond in an appropriate way that basically served communities that we advocate for. What we found is with so many of the artists we serve having lived through past trauma in their home countries and arriving here as refugees, this type of crisis has brought to the surface these additional challenges that are faced by these communities. And we think that as a sector, it's critical that we ensure we're extending our invitation to artists of colour in particular to be a part of this new paradigm. And really, in this time, so many of the inequalities that perpetuate through the sector already amplify. We firmly believe that it's important to think about some of the inequities that sit behind these new ways of engaging with music and really just take a moment to breathe and go, well, okay, how is this going to work for an artist that has a phone plan that doesn't allow for enough data to broadcast? Just really minor things that become obviously really major. I think art will be a huge element of helping us get through this time. We'd strongly encourage that we take a moment to really ensure that diversity representation is 100% prioritised right now as much as it was a few months ago, and then also into the future.
Create or Die is a Sydney-based arts organisation who usually provide physical spaces to support artists grow and develop their practice. Since COVID-19 has restricted their operations, Create or Die have teamed up with local production company Doppler to transform their space into a stage for online performances.
It's just so beautiful. Like, no one's getting paid. And there's just like these really, really highly skilled professionals who normally do gigs at the Opera House and Edmore Theatre. And they're just here because they're like, we just really want to support the arts and entertainment industry. And we don't want it to disappear.
Deb Morgan is the artistic director at Create or Die and is working to monetize the new online shows to ensure that the people working so hard putting everything together get compensated. But it's a hard negotiation between keeping the art accessible and making enough money to survive.
We have digital tickets, so the audience can pay what they can. We don't have a set price or a paywall or anything like that because we want to reach as many people as possible and we don't want it to be like a barrier for people. But obviously we all need to eat. Grants are coming out every day, so there is definitely help coming and we're hopeful of that. But it's been nearly a month now and some of my crew haven't been paid for a month. And these are people who, like, they really do live week to week.
What has the experience been like for the artists?
It's a weird experience because you're playing a show to nobody. The tech team, there's only 8. So you're playing in a huge venue to 8 people and we're all like spread out. I implemented the spoken word clicks. We can't make much noise because we're recording. So we just click and they're like, oh, like it's just such a small thing, but it's really special for everybody involved.
One of the weekly events streamed on the Create or Die Facebook page is Queer and Loud TV, made in collaboration with Heaps Gay.
Let's party! Happy isolation, hopefully!
It's a bit of a variety show. It's a pretty intense show for us to run because it's very, very high energy and lots of changeovers and like trying to deal with high speed changeovers with our new COVID regulations. It's so hard. But yeah, I'm so, so excited about this.
Well, While experiencing art and culture through a screen might not come with the warm buzz of a packed audience, personally, I found a lot of comfort from these new online events. We're all going through a lot right now, and we all have different ways we process our emotions. I don't know about you, but when I'm going through it, I always turn to music. You might watch your favorite movie, read a poem, or paint watercolors. The point is, we'll need the arts to get through this crisis and to help us make sense of everything once the storm has passed and we're trying to rebuild ourselves. But our arts sector needs our support now to ensure there'll still be a whole lot of great content there to comfort us through the tough times ahead. If you're lucky enough to still be employed and working from home, maybe consider putting some of the money you're saving not going out towards supporting local artists. Donate what you can, buy some merch, buy that album you love, or a print from that artist whose drawings always make you smile. And hey, if you're struggling financially, your clicks help too. Make sure you like the Create or Die Moogalin Performing Arts and Multicultural Arts Victoria Facebook pages. And tune into live streams to support their work.
Here's a song for the artist and the freelancer too. Those who can't take the day off if they get the flu. To the broke full-time artist with no salary, the ones we wish we had the courage to be.
Danny Stewart produced that story. Alison Chan was the supervising producer. The song you're hearing is A Song for the Artists from Martin Ingle, who you heard earlier, with Sheldon Jadamson on piano, recorded at the Bearded Lady in Brisbane. You also heard music from Gellera Poor, an artist involved with the Distance Between Us program, and Dobby, whose live-streamed performances can be found on the Moogalin Performing Arts Facebook page. More info on all the initiatives mentioned can be found in the show notes. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. When people started losing work because of coronavirus restrictions, there was one panicked thought on a lot of people's minds. How am I going to pay my rent? Rachel thought of this early on, not so much for herself, but for her neighbours.
In a time when there doesn't really feel like there's much that any of us can do, Rachel found a way to take action.
Relatively early on in the pandemic, I had almost this sense of survivor's guilt of knowing a lot of people who were my co-workers who were suddenly facing eviction or homelessness. And I could so clearly picture that of being me if this had happened a year or so earlier than it did. I live in an apartment building which is 5 units and they're all owned by the same man. So I thought I would reach out and just write little notes to my neighbours saying, hey, I just want you to know that if you can't afford to pay your rent anymore and you let me know in apartment two, I will also offer to withhold rent if there's any threat that you might be evicted. And I kind of didn't think much of it. And then I started getting all these notes back saying, I'm on board with this as well. I'm on board with this as well. I'm on board with this as well. And one note from someone who lives in an apartment above me saying that they had just lost their job and that this was the first time that they'd been able to kind of calm down since they'd lost their job about what the repercussions of that might be. I was really, really surprised by how much everyone was on board and how much everyone was really eager to kind of join together in something like this. I didn't actually know my neighbours before this. You know, you see them around, you kind of know who they are, and it would be really confronting to think of the people who are close to you suddenly being without a home.
Rachel's situation came to a head when the landlord came to collect rent and the neighbour who'd lost her job couldn't pay. And what eventuated was this kind of socially distanced picket line in the stairwell.
Our landlord collects rent in person every fortnight. We basically all stayed out of our apartments when he came around and waited for him to get to that person's apartment block. And to make sure he knew we were all there and we were all watching, we kind of lined up around three stairs away from each other, trying to gauge out 1.5 metres on the stairwell.
The neighbour explained her situation to the landlord
and said, you know, that we'd agreed to stand with her if there was any move towards eviction or if he pressured her to do things that were beyond her means. And he agreed that for the time period until her Centrelink payments come through, which could be up to 4 weeks, she won't have to pay rent and he'll forgive it for now, which is definitely a win. But I guess it's also one of those issues around clarity in terms of, does that come with a debt? So I think it is hard. There still are a lot of things which aren't quite clear.
In late March, the Prime Minister Scott Morrison announced a moratorium on evictions. But what that would actually mean was yet to be decided state to state. Rachel lives in New South Wales, and on April 15th, the New South Wales government introduced new measures that implemented a 60-day ban on evictions. But Rachel's concerns about whether her neighbour would have rental debt remain an issue. Jenny Leong, who's the member for Newtown for the New South Wales Greens, has campaigned for tenants' rights through the pandemic and before it started. I asked her what she thought of the changes.
The measures announced by the New South Wales government take what is a much needed first step when it comes to basically putting a moratorium on evictions to say that at the very least, what we need to be sure of is that nobody is being evicted into homelessness in the middle of this pandemic. There are absolutely concerns about whether or not this moratorium goes far enough. The issue of rental arrears and not being able to pay rent is a real problem. And so lots of people will not want to go into a massive rental debt and they're not sure where their income is going to come from in the future given these really uncertain economic times. And so one of the things that is absolutely needed to partner with the idea of a moratorium on evictions is some form of direct rent relief to be able to provide financial support to people that are renting and reassure them that even if they take advantage of this moratorium, they're not going to find themselves in, say, 60 days or 6 months' time slugged with a massive rental arrears debt and then finding themselves at the risk of being booted out by their landlord then.
In New South Wales, the advice from government is that these issues should be resolved by the tenant and the landlord coming to the table and negotiating. And part of the new measures announced by the state government has been a boost of funding to the Tenancy Support Service, the New South Wales Tenants Union, to assist with these negotiations. But requiring individual tenants to negotiate does mean rent reductions are less accessible than they could be.
The idea of having a individual negotiation happening when what we could be seeing across the board is some genuine requirements for rent reduction would be a much better option to be able to take. In some cases, people are empowered and understand their rights as tenants. They know how to access government services and support, and they are switched on and watching the announcements as they're coming out live on Facebook each day. But for other people, we know they might be working a lot more than regular hours. They may be finding themselves in a situation where they don't have regular access to the internet or are in a situation where English is not their first language. And in those circumstances, the likelihood that people are keeping track of the incredibly complex information that is coming out of government is really, really low.
Rachel is one of those people who knows her rights pretty well. But she also understands the feeling of powerlessness as a tenant, which is why taking the action she did felt so important.
I think the rent market thrives off people feeling like prices are set beyond them and that they don't have the ability to negotiate. Even when most people are given their rental contracts for leases, it's presented to you as if you have no ability to change any of its contents because you are so replaceable in the rental market. There is no sense of collectivism. There is no sense that you could band together with other people. So to have that experience of you dictating terms collectively to your landlord rather than your landlord being the keeper of an asset that you need to live was so different and so empowering. And in the context of so many things feeling completely out of your hands, for me at least, that felt really powerful.
There is a very, very significant power imbalance between the property investors and the people that make money from property and the people that live in rental accommodation. What we know is that whenever there is a power imbalance, the best thing that people can do is to come together and collectively organise.
Like many of us, Rachel still isn't sure what's going to happen to her and her neighbours in the next few months. But she does know that something has shifted in the way they see each other.
I haven't known the people who lived around me since I was a teenager living in a small country town. I've kind of just been surrounded by anonymous faces since I moved to Sydney. Now I do know those people's names. We have each other's phone numbers. If something goes wrong or even if they run out of toilet paper, they know that there's someone who lives next to them whose name they know, who they can actually knock on the door of. Or even just now that you can't really go outside much, in our communal backyard, you'll just stand there for sunlight and someone that you actually know will come out. So I think even moving beyond just rent solidarity, it's done something for my sense of immediate community solidarity, which I didn't necessarily have before.
That story was produced by Matilda Fay. The supervising producer was Ryan Pemberton. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Josh McKay. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best community coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe. One more thing before we go. One of our supervising producers, Sarah Mashman, worked on this new podcast, bringing us into the communities affected by the recent bushfires. It's called From the Embers, it's out now, and you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Here's a preview.
It was like a click of the fingers. We were daylight and then total darkness and then total red and black. My blood literally ran cold. I thought, this is it. This is it. We are gone. We are gone. The roar of that fire was deafening. And then when it passed, all you could hear was sirens.
From the Embers, a new series sharing stories from communities affected by the 2019-2020 bushfires.
As we were coming back home, the neighbour called to ask where the hell we were. We pulled in, got out of the car, and the alarms were blaring over at the army base. The military were evacuating.
When those guys bog off, you follow, or you're an idiot.
After the fire, there was such a silence and a deficit of bird life. It was eerie.
We'll be taking you into towns across Australia to hear what it was like when their area was threatened by fire.
It makes me feel pretty bad to think about when we lost the radio, because by that stage we were glued to the radio and we were really, really worried. And it felt like being on a little boat on a sea in the dark and you had one anchor rope and then it just disappeared, and it was terrifying to lose that connection.
We'll show you how these communities survive.
My daughter said, "I don't like looking out of my window because my window looks scary." My son just answered, "Just look out of my window, it's beautiful on my side." And so when we drove out, the fire was behind us, so all we could see was blue sky, and it was actually a lovely day.
From the Embers, a 9-part series brought to you by the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia, supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute for Journalism and Ideas and the Paul Ramsey Foundation. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe now, listen and share from April 28.